It's January 19th, 2012. This is the Hell Yeah Show. Hello and welcome to the Hell Yeah Show. I'm Alan.
I'm Emery.
And we are bringing you best practices for fine living, advice on how to not let technology ruin your day. Emery.
You never name your kid .com.
It's just not a good idea. Oh, Mega Upload got shut down today.
Yeah.
I think, well...
You told me.
Yeah, I told you. You didn't know.
No.
I mean, what a terrible website. And it and
Is
founded
it?
By a terrible person.
Well, yeah. See, I didn't even know he owned it. There's the, yeah. that, his name is, he calls himself Kim.com.
Kim.com, yes.
But I remembered him in like the late 90s as being like, you know, Kimball, like the super hacker who actually wasn't really as much of a hacker as he was like an inside trader and general D-bag.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll get into that later in the show about Mega Upload as well as some other piracy-related issues, which you may or may not have heard of this past week.
Yarr! Every time you say pirate, I want to do that.
Uh-huh. Imagine what it's like in the Swedish parliament. Just constant pirate references.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Before we get to that, though, that will be towards the end, later in the show. But before we get to that, we've got our stuff. So, Emery, what stuff do you have for listeners this week?
Well, kind of along the lines of the Mega Upload thing is with all the SOPA and PIPA stuff, there's been this, how they classify these alleged rogue sites. And just as, you know, I guess we should probably talk about Mega Upload later, but they had like this list of like, you know, websites that the people who were in favor of getting SOPA or PIPA passed through Congress and the Senate, and some of like the lists of people that were, or some of the websites and some of the domains that wound up on the hit list, as it were things like Craigslist and eBay and Sears.com. And it turns out that the main reason for this is that Monster Cable, the guys that sell you the, you know, $200
gold-plated
cables,
the gold-plated overpriced HDMI cable, yeah.
Oh yeah. They have they own the Monster, you know, the Beats by Dr. Dre brand, and
Which
I guess there's
the
like
worst.
A million and terrible. I haven't owned a pair of these, but I walk past them all the time. And the general rule is, you know, if you can see like scuffs in the plastic on the headphone, you're probably in trouble.
Yeah.
But I see people wearing them all the time, and like I don't know exactly what the allure is of them. But
well, you were saying before the show, this is classic Monster. I mean, it's a terrible product with very good marketing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they get someone to, they get someone to put their name on it, and they get some strong branding, and you know, play a lot of glitzy advertisements everywhere. I don't know.
Yeah. The story, though.
Apparently, there's like a whole list of these domain names that are like, you know, Beats by Dr. Dre headphones for you.com and things like that. And the argument is that they're not an authorized Beats by Dr. Dre reseller, so they are trying to say that they're a rogue site, need to be shut down. Now, the problem is that then you have people like, you know, on Craigslist selling a pair of headphones and they're trying to say that they need to shut down Craigslist and eBay and Sears.com because there are people selling headphones to other people. And
of course, it's perfectly legal to sell your used Beats by Dr. Dre headphones to other people. In fact, it's perfectly legal to sell your new Beats by Dr. Dre headphones to other people.
Is it? Because
yeah.
They're saying that it's not.
That's
their whole argument is that it's not. Because if you are not an authorized reseller, then it's like in that gray market. See, this happens with cameras, too. Like, you know, Nikon and Canon go after people that are selling cameras all the time.
I think there's a difference between selling it on an individual level and selling it as a, you know, as a reseller.
I agree.
Yeah, but I'm not sure what the actual legal difference is. So, but I can't imagine that you couldn't sell your... You know, you bought a pair of Dr. Dre or Beats by Dr. Dre headphones. I can't imagine that you can't turn that around and sell it to someone, whether it's via Craigslist or by them handing you cash. I mean, that
that would be what you would think. But
yeah.
There's also the other side of this coin is, of course, you know, the people that think that, you know, if you buy a computer or some software that you're not actually buying the software, you're buying a license to use it.
Well, with software, so, I can believe it, you know, because that's often that's often part of buying software, that's in the terms and conditions, or that is the agreement you're making when you buy software. But when you buy a physical object, you own that physical object for the most part.
Yeah, but in the case of like software licensing, you don't, because like remember the AutoCAD thing on eBay? Like someone was trying to sell. There was like a big lawsuit because someone wanted to sell like I think it was AutoCAD. They were trying to sell like their install media for AutoCAD on eBay or something.
Huh.
And then the AutoCAD people like sued them. It was like a really big deal, and they said that you cannot sell the software and the soft. I mean, essentially, even if you're just selling like, you know, the installation media or whatever, like that's, they still take a dim view of that. I'm not saying that that's, you know, what the monster people are saying, but I don't think it's much of a stretch where, you know, it's already at the point where a lot of times if you buy music or a movie or something with DRM on it, you're not actually buying a copy of the movie. You're buying the right to watch it.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
So then you can't do anything else with it. And it's only a matter of time before they start applying that to other things too, right? Like, I don't know. The fact is, though, that like the individual sellers and things, especially like the Craigslist part, is pretty absurd. But there's also a possibility that there is like, you know, a cartel of people that are selling these gray market headphones through sites like eBay and Sears. I mean, there's a lot of counterfeit or somewhat questionable stuff on eBay in particular.
Of course.
You can get like the knockoff just about anything. And then there's even like these... I can't remember how I came across it, but one time, one of my Google search results was something about how to spot like these counterfeit bags or something. And it was like, you know, Coach bags. But it was basically like there's like a community of ladies who can identify a counterfeit purse at like 100 yards. And they have all of this like, they have all this methodology and everything, and then they run like these websites where you have forums and people can say like, you know, I saw this on eBay and they post a link, you know, is this real? And then like, you know, the sewing circle gathers around and looks over the auction and looks at the photos and they're like, yeah, this is an authentic whatever bag. And yeah, it's completely crazy. There's like all these like I don't know if I'd call them like user groups or I don't know what you'd call them, like, you know, they're essentially just a consumer like panels, if you will, to help people identify bogus goods.
Yep. No, there's a similar thing for Scotty Cameron putters. It's a special brand of golf putter, and on golf forums, people will often post, "Hey, here's this eBay auction of this Scotty Cameron putter. Is this a real Scotty Cameron putter?" You know.
Yeah, and then like, you know, 18 dudes will like sit there and, you know, stroke their beards and look at the pictures for a while and wear a monocle, and they come back and they say, "Yep, sure enough, it's a proper putter. You know, enjoy." Or, you know, that's a Wilson, or whoever makes golf putters.
Anyway, but was this as much about counterfeit stuff as it was just about unauthorized resellers? I mean, because obviously Sears.com is not selling counterfeit Dr. Dre headphones.
Well, interesting thing about that. So Sears has a user-driven component of it.
Really?
So on Sears.com, it's kind of like, you know, Amazon, where other vendors can sell things through Sears.
Oh, wow. Huh.
So there is a certain element of that in play there. So it's really, I really doubt that it's like, you know, like Sears stores, but Sears is allowing people to list potentially bogus, counterfeit, or otherwise unauthorized goods.
Sure. Yeah. Huh. Wow. I had no idea. Hmm.
Yeah, it's a little sketchy. And then this is also like, I mean,
on the flip side of counterfeit, we have Zappos.com.
Yeah. And you know, what's really scary about that is that they're an Amazon company, but they don't, I guess they're not like integrated. But so there was a compromise. I got an email, I think it was Sunday, maybe. But I got an email that said, "Bad news, Bears. Your Zappos account was probably looked at by somebody, and here's what we know." And they said, database was compromised, like billing information was taken, but not the full credit card, which is good, because they're no vendor should be storing the whole credit card, which was why when that family leadership council in Florida or whatever that was protesting the Muslim show with the Remember the Lowe's home improvement thing?
Yeah, yeah.
Those idiots had like the entire card stored in a database. basically, like they did everything wrong. But it sounds like the Zappos people did everything right. You know, like
well, I mean that you know they're as far as companies go, they're pretty savvy about this sort of thing, I'd imagine.
Well, yeah, they should be. I mean, and the and plus, I mean, they're a big enough merchant that they really need to pay attention to this kind of stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, everyone needs to pay attention to this, but there's a lot of smaller organizations that might not. But in the case of like you know Zappos, they're a legit group and they're on the level. But they did say that it's possible that the passwords got ganked, but you know they're encrypted. But I don't have any details on like how well they were encrypted or salted.
Do you know what the response time was? I mean, what was the time between compromise and when they alerted people? Do you know?
Not sure.
Okay.
The best guess that I had was that I mean they were playing like they had just recently discovered this.
Okay.
But
yeah.
I find it odd or a little difficult to believe that, I mean, on the one hand, people are a little skittish after the Sony thing, but, you know, if you're conducting an ongoing criminal investigation, you're working with law enforcement, especially like, you know, the FBI, you may need to like delay a little bit. So at least you can get enough forensics evidence and things like that.
Right. Yeah.
Or before you notify the person that, you know, they've been there.
Yeah.
It really depends on, a lot of other factors too, right? But it's also possible that they were set up for this kind of thing and already have like a response plan in place, and they were able to take a snapshot of everything relevant and then make the notification and hand over whatever they had. So there's always that possibility too. But I haven't seen anything in terms of like you know, no big list of leaked passwords in Pastebin or anything like that I can tell. There's like there's been a lot of stories to follow up and things like that, but I mean, I don't know. It's interesting, and it got me thinking. You know, like there's a lot of people that even it's odd because I'm not too worried about the purchasing information because I have bought things from Zappos before. Mm-hmm. I think I bought a couple pairs of shoes in my day, and there's also this other problem though where that database has other things in it. You know, so it's not just that I should be worried about someone racking up, you know, some charges on a credit card. I'm kind of concerned that, like, you know, my name and my address and all that could be floating around up. And I know that it already is.
Right.
But the fact that that service stored that kind of information about me. And then if you think about it, I mean, there are probably hundreds of places where my information lives, and that really bothers me. And like this whole thing with like the Google changing their search results thing, and like the Google Plus integration into Gmail, and it's really starting to freak me out. And I never really have thought of myself as like being really resistant to this type of stuff. And like, you know, I'm not like one of the get off my lawn type, like, you know, old internet fogies. But, you know, on the flip side of this though, like there's a lot of people with a lot of information, and I honestly couldn't tell you if anybody is doing their due diligence to protect that data. And, you know, what's that data worth? Like, not a lot, but it's worth a lot to me. Like, if someone wants to have my home address, like, they can probably find it. But, you know, do I really need someone to have like a database of like 24 million people's information like that? Like, what does that do? At that type of scale, like that's a big deal.
And it seems like lately, I mean, I wonder if it seems like we've been getting this sort of news a lot lately. Of, you know, here is this big company that had some massive amount of their accounts compromised, or, you know, a massive chunk of their account data. And I'm wondering if it's just that it's been more publicized lately, or maybe I've just been paying closer attention to it, or if like this is actually there have been more incidents of this recently than there have been in the past.
Well, in some cases, I mean, there is a legitimate concern that I have that's really a question of due diligence. Like, there's a lot of times where this happens where it's really because the people who were taking and collecting this information did not do a good enough job to protect it.
Well, like the Sony case. And, I mean, they had super outdated servers, and they didn't encrypt their stuff properly.
Well, you know, that it's funny you mention that, because they actually don't know that that's the case.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there was that guy who like testified from IU that went to Congress and whatever. But one interesting thing is that, and not a lot of people like outside the industry don't realize this, but sometimes systems don't fingerprint the way that they really are, especially in the case of some operating systems that do what's called like backporting of patches. So if you do like a vulnerability assessment and you're looking at something.com and it comes back and says, oh, well, this is a Red Hat server and it's running this really old version of Apache, it's probably not actually running an old version of Apache because the vendor, in this case, Red Hat, does not blanket update patches. They are like they don't update the packages to the latest version. What they do is they backport security fixes into the version that was released.
You can
frequently get mixed results from this. And some vulnerability assessment tools and some scanning software is better at identifying these backported patches than others. And there's other ways to do it. But the information that was batted around about Sony, to be fair to Sony, and believe me,
you are no fan of Sony.
No, I am not. There's very little to know evidence that I saw that they actually had like really old ancient servers running this old vulnerable software.
Okay.
I think in a lot of cases there are custom applications that are written, these web applications that don't do proper like input validation. They don't do proper, they don't sanitize input so that when you can kind of trick an application into giving you back error messages that will give you clues to how the app works and then kind of figure out a way to, they call it blind SQL injection, when you're like just feeding commands somewhat randomly into an application to get it to do stuff on the back end. I think a lot of stuff like that happens because, you know, they hire in like, oh, we need someone to do this e-commerce site, and then they hire somebody and they don't do a good job of assessing the code, and then they don't audit it very well, and then that person leaves and it's never been documented. Like, there's an awful lot of turnover in some of these work groups that do this kind of stuff. So I think it's mainly a problem of not just, I mean, it's easy to say that they're just incompetent or whatever, but it's really, it's not necessarily, it's very complicated.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
All right. Well, speaking of complicated.
It's scary though.
It is scary. It is indeed. Speaking of complicated, my relationship with Sirius XM.
You didn't dump her yet?
No, I'm still doing the Sirius XM thing. I'm still a subscriber to their online streaming service, which I don't really use.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, once in a while. Here's the thing, though. They have that MetOpera radio channel. And they actually had a great Christmas music channel too, of like classical classical music, Christmas.
I got to get the Frasier theme stuff. Music every time you start talking about the opera
about
channel.
The opera. So they've got this Met Opera channel on Sirius XM, and it has live performances from the New York Metropolitan Opera, like multiple times a week. And it's great. It's great. They do commentary on it during the intermission. They do they do interviews with the people who are singing, and they broadcast the whole opera live. And it's great. And I don't even know opera. Like I could not name a single opera composer.
Really?
No. But I like the fact that I have this service there. So that if there's something happening at the New York Metropolitan Opera, I can tune into it.
Don't they like broadcast on the internet?
No, not to this degree. This is a whole show. They have like they have a host, they have interviews, they have back and forth with audience members. They have like trivia things. I don't think. I'm looking on their website now, but
did you ever see the old Muppet Show?
No. Okay. Maybe? I don't know.
Well, there are these two dudes that hung out like in the balcony at an opera house.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Of course. Yeah.
I would listen to the opera channel if those two guys were doing like the commentary.
So I'm looking at the Met's site now, and they do they have an online player where you can listen to operas on demand. But yeah, they don't. I mean, the Sirius XM thing is it's hosted by Margaret Chun White, and it's this production. It's nice. Anyway,
how many NPRs do they have?
They've got one NPR. They've got a bunch of public radio channels, but they've only got one actual NPR channel. So,
I thought Sirius had like a ton of NPR affiliates.
You can listen to pretty much any NPR affiliates live stream online for free.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But that was always like kind of the draw for Sirius, though. Like if I'm in the car.
Yeah. True.
Like I can get Sirius in the car. I've never activated it.
I don't have it in my car. I've just got their online streaming player, which, you know what? I should probably unsubscribe.
Yeah, I think it's time. I think you'll find something else.
Yeah, and you know what?
Find someone else.
Their streaming sucks. Like I've said this before on the show. They are terrible at streaming audio. And
you have complained about this before.
I know.
I think it's time you let them have it.
As I said, it's a complicated relationship.
Don't take my Sirius away. I love him.
Oh yeah. Anyway, okay. That's all. That's my stuff for this week. That's my emotional baggage for this week. Moving on to our main topic. Emery, you want to hit it here?
I am.
Yeah. Oh, here we go.
There's like the mega upload song that was posted up on the YouTubes. Upload. Who is that? Like, that's Will I Am, right?
It's, I don't know if the person singing right now is actually Will I Am.
Okay.
Upload.
What do you think?
The Will I Am is definitely featured in this video, as is Kim Kardashian and like a few other hip hop artists.
Oh, here we go. Here's the best part. That's kind of ridiculous.
That's Will I Am, I believe.
I use mega uploads, man.
I like to use mega upload.
Yeah, I like mega upload.
All these people, they love their mega upload.
They do indeed.
Look at all these people. They love mega upload.
All right,
I'll fade it out.
Yeah, let's. Okay.
I don't get it, though. So, like, there's this, like, theme fan song for mega upload.
Yes.
And this is because. Was this released before or after Kim.com?
Well, okay, so some background here. So Mega Upload is this website that typically is known for hosting large amounts of pirated content. Yeah, I know. So they've been in disputes with, you know, all of the acronym organizations of the motion picture and record industries for years. And so they
Let's
at some point
find Mega Upload.
What's that?
I'm surprised those guys could find Mega Upload on the internet.
So
most of them have no clue. That's awesome.
Well, I mean, the thing is, they do Google searches for their artists, and Mega Upload comes up. So you know.
Well, what about all the other? Like, seriously,
I know.
Like a million.
I know. Anyway, but apparently, Mega Upload represented 4% of internet traffic.
That's BS.
I know. Anyway, but okay.
I'm wondering. So, I bet.
How do they measure that?
The people
that
bringing these charges could possibly quantify that.
So Mega Upload, you know, very contentious, and the record industry hated it, and all this stuff. And so they released this video. They apparently paid a bunch of hip hop artists and other celebrities to endorse Mega Upload in this ridiculous YouTube video that you can go and watch on your own time. And the Universal Music Group actually filed a takedown notice for this video, despite the fact that they don't own the song in the video.
But they
own the artists, I guess, right?
That's awesome.
I know. So they filed a takedown notice on YouTube because they claimed that they had an arrangement with YouTube whereby YouTube would take down any video that featured one of their artists. YouTube later denied that they ever had any such arrangement, but the video, this video, this Mega Upload video, was taken down briefly as a result of you know, Universal Music Group's takedown request. And so there was actually a big legal dispute between Mega Upload and Universal Music Group. So that's the story of this video. But the actual story of the day here is that Mega Upload is no more. If you try and go to megaupload.com right now, it will not resolve. You will get nothing because the government of the United States has seized all of Mega Upload's domain names which,
you know what's awesome?
Yeah.
I shouldn't say it's awesome. But the follow-ups that I'm seeing on like CNN right now is that apparently some people did a denial of service attack and took out universalmusic.com and justice.gov.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah.
So there's apparently been like an escalating back and forth.
But it's okay, so the thing is, I mean, okay, well, first of all, this is 7 employees of Mega Upload were charged with violation of piracy laws, including the founder, Kim.com, who is just the worst.
I can't possibly take him seriously.
I know.
That's like naming someone Flower.
Yeah. Mega Upload is, in my opinion, just a terrible website. I mean, it's the design of it sucks. It's all about trying to convince you to subscribe to their premium service while also selling you really atrocious ads. And the idea is that with their premium service, you can download things faster. But I mean, can you think of a time you ever used or saw someone using Mega Upload for a legitimate purpose?
You know, it's funny though, because Mega Upload had a registered DMCA agent. So one of the things that you do as a service provider is to have some sort of shelter from liability about, or to protect you against lawsuits and liability for things like this that your end users are uploading. Because, I mean, Mega Upload, the argument here would be that, they're not the ones uploading
right.
stuff.
Like, yeah,
they're a locker site, like, you know, Dropbox would be, or Box.com, or, there's a lot of stuff out there
and none
like
of those,
that.
Yeah, and YouTube, none of those websites are responsible if their users upload content. They're just...
Yeah, not yet.
Not yet, not yet. Right, yeah.
We'll talk about
that in a bit. Yeah.
But, like, these guys had, and to avoid that type of liability, you have to have what's called a registered agent for DMCA complaint, so that when there is a copyright complaint, that there is a person that someone can contact to send a takedown notice to.
Yeah.
So I
haven't read the full complaint, or the full indictment, but... actually, I haven't read any of the indictment. I probably should. But I believe there were plenty of other factors at play here, especially looking... I mean, we were looking earlier at the history of just absolute atrocious business practices of the founder, Kim.com. I doubt they were playing by the rules entirely. But, as you say, they did have the excuse of, oh, well, if you want to take down one of the videos, if there's a legitimate complaint, we'll address that complaint and take down... the offending file.
Yeah, and then there's also the argument, though, where I know, like, the counterclaim that this unfortunately self-named individual has is that, like, there some of the competing sites to Mega Upload, like File Server and Upload Station and all that nonsense, like, they do not apparently have the same, like, infringement policies, and they use PayPal to pay people. Stolen content.
So Mega Upload, to pay people for it. Wow. I mean, Mega Upload use PayPal to accept all of its payment, to accept.
Yeah, apparently some of these other sites actually use PayPal to pay out to people.
That's pretty ridiculous. Wow.
That's way shady.
Yeah.
And PayPal is probably happy to facilitate this.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Like, PayPal apparently made several $1 million off of Mega Upload over the past couple of years. So
at least.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like, it's absolutely crazy.
Yeah. Well, so, and then here's the other side of this story, right? This investigation has been going on for years. It apparently was a very fruitful investigation because they were able to arrest 7 people. I believe none of whom were actually in the United States. Kim.com was certainly in New Zealand.
Did you hear about their license plates? The indictment that they handed out for 6 people. They had 14 cars, and their license plates had things like police, mafia, stoned, CEO, hacker, evil, and then one was guilty.
Yep.
Love it.
Yep. So anyway, this ongoing investigation for years, successful. They found illegal behavior, and they wrote up this indictment, which you can read. And this all happened without the SOPA or PIPA legislation that we're currently seeing going through the U.S. Congress, which is legislation designed specifically to, make something like this more possible, right? To make it more possible to take down offending websites like this.
Yeah, you know what though? Like the more I read about this, the more ridiculous this gets. Because this mega upload, like seriously, like there's a good article on Ars Technica.
Uh-huh.
And you know, there's at least apparently like they have got a record of at least 5,000 DMCA takedowns a day for
wow.
time, like for one person, and like the, I mean. To some extent, yes. Like they knew that people were posting copyrighted material. But then on the other hand, like if they got a request to take it down, apparently there's no evidence that they never honored that.
Right. Yeah. No. As I said, there must be other stuff at play here. I mean, yeah. Besides just users posted copyrighted content and they responded to it. You know.
Well, the argument is that the DMCA safe harbor does not apply to sites that have knowledge of infringing material, and the reason that they're saying that they know they have infringing material is because of like things like analytics.
Huh. Interesting. Okay.
So,
yeah.
I don't know. And to be fair, like some of like the chats and stuff that they've got records of as part of this filing, they are glib about this. Like, you know, they're like they know that
yeah,
people are transferring
obviously.
Stuff.
I mean, Mega Upload was but, not you know, maybe but, it was originally designed, but it certainly was well, I you know, considering who it was founded by, I highly doubt Mega Upload ever intended to be a completely legitimate website.
Yeah. I don't know. But then, like, you know, what happens with any service that's transferring stolen goods?
No,
like,
I know. You know, it's the difference between a website that is designed for legitimate purposes, but is used illegitimately, but does everything it can to not be used illegitimately. And a website that is, you know, whose managers and founders are, you know, aware of the fact that the website is intended for illegitimate activity.
It's so bizarre. It's so surreal to me. Like, I can't even, I'm having a hard time, like, taking it seriously. But then, like, because the writer of the Ars article, let's see, Nate Anderson, like one good thing pointed out here is that when Viacom was making some of the same charges against YouTube,
mm-hmm.
it didn't go to the FBI and try to get Eric Schmidt and Chad Hurley arrested. You know?
Right.
And Google was arguably profiting more from copyrighted material on YouTube than Mega Upload may have been.
That's possible. Yeah, I don't know the numbers, but I mean, certainly YouTube is a bigger site than Mega Upload is.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you know, in that particular case.
But I think if you looked at the percentage of copyrighted videos on, or copyrighted material on, you know, as far as like total amount of things hosted, I
can't get to justice.gov. It's still shut down. I wanted to read the filing and it's like,
from my experience, Mega Upload was almost entirely, consisting of copyrighted material, that was not, there was copyrighted material that was being illicitly distributed there.
I don't know that I ever wound up there on purpose anyway. Like most of the time you'd end up there through like a sponsored link somewhere.
Right. Yeah.
Like you'd go to Google and you'd do a search for something else completely unrelated to something. And then you'd end up at like a download landing page for something that kicked you over to their site. It was so dumb.
That's the other crime being committed here, really, is that...
Yeah, they're crapping up my internet.
Exactly, yeah. Precisely. Yeah. So this goes along with the Stop Online... not Privacy. Stop Online Piracy Act. And
you're not the only person that does that. There was like I can't remember where this was, but this is actually like, I want to say it wasn't CBS, was it? There was some like pretty prominent like news organization that actually had it listed as the Stop Online Privacy Act. I was like, oh,
yeah.
Yeah, like this just proves like this whole thing with Mega Upload that like SOPA and PIPA like are completely meaningless and are not required.
Right. I mean, if law enforcement can effectively go after a website like Mega Upload without the assistance of, and you know, this is a website that's not hosted in the United States, so this is one of the types of international websites that SOPA and PIPA are targeted at. And
yeah, but you actually had to,
I mean, this is massive. This is one of the worst offenders, and they were able to take it down without any help from something like SOPA or PIPA.
And they were also able to do something called police work, where they actually do an investigation and build a proper case and take it to a judge. And you know what I mean? Like, you know, regardless of how it all pans out, like, you know, on the, you know, service provider versus safe harbor versus being an arrogant D-bag with a terrible name, like, it, you know, how all that shakes out, you know, who's to say? It's not likely to go in their favor.
Right.
But, this type of, I mean, there's already legal remedies for this that don't involve really heavy-handed speech control. That, you know, I mean, do you really want, like, Monster Cable to be able to say, like, oh, well, can't have Sears.com anymore, can't have eBay? You want those people to be making the decision. And the people who wrote this horrible legislation and were, like, being spoon-fed bad laws from other people to put forward, like, the very fact that, like, they clearly did not even understand what they were signing proves that they're not working in your best interest.
Right. And, well, okay, and then the other side of this is on the SOPA and PIPA front. This week was actually a pretty big week for this stuff, because the Mega Upload thing was a massive story. But also, there was this big protest day on Wednesday, which apparently worked. As far as I can tell, I know you have some doubts about it. Let me run through the details real quick before we get into this. But on Wednesday, Reddit, Wikipedia, a few other websites were blocked out. Google had like a black bar across their logo with some information about how to sign a petition and get involved against SOPA and PIPA. But the idea was sort of an online protest to raise awareness about these two bills that are working their way through Congress and are scheduled. I believe SOPA is scheduled for a vote early next week. So it was this timed protest to try and raise awareness before the vote came up, so that hopefully the vote next week fails. And right after as these protests happened, as more people ended up signing petitions, calling their representatives, all this stuff, a significant number of the bill's backers, people who had been co-sponsors of these bills, reversed their stance and said, you know, these need more work. We need to go back to the drawing board. Said, you know, I don't support this anymore. Various things like that. So something from my view, these protests were successful. But I know you have a different perspective on this. So go for it.
I think. Well, so my counter argument is that I'm glad that people were motivated to like call people and everything like that. But the problem is that I'm not convinced that it's going to matter, because I think that it's just going to come back in a year or 2 years and it's just going to be more of the same. I mean, the only way that you can possibly stop something like this from happening is to get rid of the idiots that keep writing it and putting it forward. Because, you know, they're either being puppeted by other organizations, lobbyists, and trade groups, and really don't have any idea of the laws that they're putting forward, which, you know, is further proof to me that they're not acting in your best interest and should be out on their rear end anyways.
I was thinking the other day, it'd be great to see an interview where the sponsors of the, you know, the people who brought these bills to the Congress, where like an interview where someone asks them to explain what DNS is.
Like, oh yeah. Yeah. I would love to see that. I would love to see that, because I bet you $5 that every one of these idiots has a VCR in their house. That's right. A VCR that is still blinking 12 o'clock. Like, and they don't know how to operate a microwave oven. You know, like these are like the least qualified people to do anything. It's like if you went to the doctor's office and they sent in like a painter and they said, well, I'm looking at your x-rays and we're going to need to put like 3 coats of paint on that. You know, like, but I mean, even if you just are fine with the fact that they're idiots and that someone else is telling them what to do, the alternative is that they knew full well what they were doing and they suggested it anyways, which is also
which is even worse.
Yeah, that's even worse.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You have two different ways, in my opinion, there's two different ways to look at this, and both of them involve, you know, this gang of 12 or whoever these morons are. Let me get the list.
Lamar Smith?
It's Harry Reid from Nevada. Yeah. An idiot. Howard Berman from California. Idiot. Marsha Blackburn, Tennessee. Idiot. Mary Bono Mack, California. An idiot. Steve Chabot from Ohio. Idiot. John Conyers, Michigan. Idiot. Ted Deutsch from Florida. Idiot. I'm almost done. Elton Gallagly from California. Idiot. How many people from California? Oh, I guess they have like, you know, 50 representatives.
Yeah, yeah.
Bob Goodlatte, is that right? From Virginia. Idiot. The terrible name. Timothy Griffin from Arkansas. Idiot. Dennis Ross from Florida. Big idiot. Adam Schiff from California. Idiot. Lee Terry from Nebraska. Idiot. And of course, Lamar Smith, the biggest idiot in the world. This is also the same idiot that wanted to make, he tried to write a law last year. He tried to get a law passed that would, what was it? It was, I think he's the one that wanted the Stop Online Predators Act, where like he wanted to force ISPs to retain logs so that they could retroactively do police work years later.
Right. Right.
Like without, you know, without necessarily even having a warrant, like they just wanted to be able to query and say like, oh, who went to, you know, such and such website.com.
Yeah,
and like,
yeah.
And people were totally like, hey, yeah, this sounds like a great idea. This will protect our children. And like, it was really an end run by the copyright industry, like, because they wanted to be able to go back and retroactively sue people for downloading movies that they didn't pay 99 cents for. Because if someone watches The Kardashians without paying a quarter, you know, people start crying and there's murder in the streets. Like, it is the very fact that, like, we're in a country with, what is it, like 9% unemployment, and these idiots are trying to think of ways to stifle innovation, and it blows my mind.
Well, and the other side of this,
idiots needs to go. They need to be out.
The other side of this, which actually I made the argument on an earlier show, you know. So yeah, we've got these very strong lobbying interests from this the old media, you know, Hollywood, from news organizations, from the music industry. We've got this very strong lobbying from there. But I mean, like, isn't the internet bigger? I mean, you know, aren't like the internet companies, aren't they making more money? Couldn't they have more lobbyists if they wanted to? You know, I asked this on an earlier show.
Yeah, but some of these guys are the same people that support it.
Certainly there are internet companies out there, like say GoDaddy.com, which
Dell,
yeah,
Dell supports
which,
it. Adobe, like
which support these bills. But you know, I was saying basically there are enough reasonable internet, you know, or modern companies out there that would oppose this sort of thing. That, you know, don't those people have more or at least equal lobbying power as all of these, you know, the old guard of copyright lobbying? And I think this whole protest thing, and you know, everything that happened this week, I think it doesn't necessarily show that, but I think it shows that at least they have more reach. I mean, the ability to raise awareness that quickly and to affect change almost instantaneously, is something that I don't think old media can do anywhere near as well. So I think there is, you know, that may be their win. You know, maybe they don't have more lobbyists, you know, the new media companies, but they can alert more people to causes like this.
Man, I'm never going to be able to wear my Juicy Couture sweatpants ever again.
if you actually go and look at the companies that are in support of these bills, it's kind of scary. I mean, there are a lot of companies that you would think would know better than this. That have come out in support of these bills. So,
well, there's also like, I mean, some of them are like alliances from other places, like the BSA, the Business Software Association, or the, what is it? Whatever that software association is that fights piracy.
Mm-hmm.
That's what, where Kaspersky dropped out of.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
A lot of the companies that are showing up as, you know, supporting it, like Intuit.
It's just because they're part of a group that supports it.
It's yeah, that's a possibility.
Because
I mean, that's how these, and they're essentially a lobbying group, right? Like they are
right.
the lobbying group for these companies, and so that's how they do this. Like in that industry, is through these like trade associations and federations like that.
Right. So so the company itself might be opposed to it, but they're not going to drop out of this valuable group just because they're opposed to it. I guess Kaspersky did, so they could do similarly.
Good on them. But like you know, and it's hard to boycott some of these companies too, like MasterCard. You're not going to boycott.
Card. Yeah,
you're not going to boycott, you know, ESPN.
Well, you might. you already do, I think, don't you?
Yeah, but it's not really on principle, other than the fact that I think sports are stupid. But like, you know, Pfizer is.
Yeah, you're not going to right. There, you know, you're if you're you know, if you've got some disease that only a Pfizer drug can cure, you're
here's what I want.
Yeah.
I want, and I don't even know, I've talked about this before with a friend of mine. I think it'd be great if there was like a website you could go to and you just put in like your political or policy predilections. Like, you know, I like gay people, I like free speech, and I like guns. And then it would generate a list of like all the domain names. Like it would generate like an ad block list, essentially. For the domain names that you should not be affiliated with if you are really serious about this, so that you stop giving traffic to these people. So, like, you remember there was like the Murdoch block when,
or the GoDaddy backlash, of people transferring their domains away from GoDaddy,
or like even the SOPA alert add-ons that cropped up a few days ago, where like if you go to a website from someone that sponsors SOPA, puts like a little banner at the top. I don't think that's good enough. I think if you actually want to hurt them, you have to stop giving them your session cookies. You got to stop giving them ad impressions. You got to stop giving them traffic. I think that flat out blocking people that you don't want to support is probably the best way to just ignore them. They don't have anything you want, and if they do, then you should probably rethink your position. But like being able to kind of like subscribe to this, I think that'd be kind of cool. And I don't know if it's really feasible because, I mean, some of these are just so widespread. Like the Murdoch block thing, like you could end up like, I mean,
Murdoch's got a lot of things under his wing. Yeah.
I mean, that's Wall Street Journal. That's News Corp sites. That's Sky News, right? On a global level, there's tons of stuff that you end up like dropping at that point. But it's maybe there's a way to do that that's not, I don't know. Maybe, I mean, has someone already thought of this? But like something like an ad blocker thing would be good. Or, I mean, the solutions that I could come up with were too nerdy, right? Like I could come up with like a host file thing.
Yeah.
Or I could come up with a DNS zone, like the way that they do spam filtering with the DNS blacklisting.
Okay, yeah.
You could do something like that where you just have like a zone file that you load. But then you're asking people to run a name server and...
No, like, you know, like a browser plugin seems about right for that, you know?
I think a browser plugin would be about right. And then, like, just boot them off the internet. Be like, they no longer exist. you guys are putzes, and I want nothing to do with you.
Isn't that what SOPA and Peep are trying to do?
Yeah,
boot people off the internet?
They're trying to make it so that nobody can get to the end. And right. I'm saying I want to make it so that I don't have to see them.
Exactly.
And if I want to, I want to control it. And it's like the same thing happens with, like, ad networks and spyware and all this nonsense where like people are just grabbing, snarfing and indexing everything about you. Like it'd be nice to be able to say like, yeah, these are the people that are watching you right now. And this is what you can do to stop that. And I don't think people know. I don't think people are at all concerned about this because they don't know how prevalent and how far reaching it is.
Right. All right. Well, on some lighter news, I guess. Moving on.
Why do we got to do that?
I know. Well,
all wound up.
That's how we do things. It's
we usually kind of avoid the political stuff. I mean, when it came to like SOPA PIPA stuff, I mean, we've talked about that, and
yeah, yep.
We don't have any. I mean, we do a pretty good job, I think, of avoiding head on any direct political issues. But when it's something like this, where you know it seems like on every side of the aisle of Congress, there's someone being stupid.
When Wikipedia, which is a you know, from all sides, a very neutral entity. I mean, that is, you know, Wikipedia prides itself.
They're the guys that, like, you know, published cables, and that's Assange, right?
No, not WikiLeaks. Oh, okay.
They hate America. They hate our freedom. Got Wiki in the name.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, Wikipedia is all about neutrality. I mean, neutrality is so crucial to the foundations of Wikipedia. And the fact that they decided, you know, as a community, it's not like the you know, Jimmy Wales and the Wikimedia folks decided this. You know, the Wikipedia community decided to block themselves out for a day. You know, I mean, this incredibly neutral body would decide something like that gives you a sense for, you know, sort of how one-sided this issue is, at least, you know, from internet communities and from people who generally have a clue about it, I guess. Yeah. Anyway, so that's, yeah, it, we, you know, I we're not giving a fair shake to the other side of the SOPA and PIPA issue, but I think that's I think we're okay on that front.
That's ridiculous. You know, it's like, yeah, you know, those we're always out there sticking up for the little guy, like Universal Pictures and Walt Disney.
all right. Well, moving on though, we have a couple more topics to move through here. We told people on the last show that there was going to be an Apple event coming up, and that event happened, and it pretty much happened the way we said it was going to happen. It was, you know, they announced textbooks for the iPad.
I like it.
I like it a lot. Yeah. So this is they're calling it iBooks 2, and they're pricing textbooks at around $15, which is pretty cool.
And letting you make your own.
And I didn't see that. Really?
Yeah, you get there's a app for the Mac that's free, and it lets you make interactive textbooks that then you can give away or sell on the store. It's amazing. Great.
Yeah, and well,
they have multi-touch textbooks. Like you can actually take like a simulation or a quiz and embed it in there. Like if you're a teacher, like you can. I mean, hype this too much. I think it's entirely possible that like a lot of teachers could very easily make their own course material using this. Like if you have the information and the knowledge to do this, you can distribute to your classes pretty good stuff that you can make yourself.
Yep. And you know, it's rich. You know, it's multimedia stuff. It's not just static text. It's or images. It's videos. It's interactive things. It's you know, of course, you're on a tablet, so you can access the web. You can, you know, do all sorts of stuff that you can't do in a traditional textbook. So
you gotta check out the iBooks author. That's the companion.
Okay. Software. Yeah. The story really I was reading did not mention that, or at least I didn't see it mention that. So that is that's very cool.
Yeah. Sweet.
Nice. All right. Well, and then the other piece of news here is that AT&T is changing their data plans yet again.
Wait. Whoa. Can we back up just for a second?
Yeah, what's up?
We should make a textbook on how to be awesome.
All right.
We could have like guide for fine look.
Okay.
Illustrated, indexed, distributed as a book.
Yeah.
I think that would be a really good project for us.
All right. Yeah, sure.
And we'll sell it for $100.
Not on the iBook store, we won't.
Yeah. Data plans?
Okay.
I didn't hear about this either.
I know. Yeah. We're rolling through your favorite companies on this show. We just did an Apple News bit, so I guess that's all right. But we're back to AT&T. They are raising the prices of their data plans, but they're also increasing the sizes of their data plans. So it's I think they're actually giving you more data per dollar, but sort of the entry level has gone up, and the, you know, amount of money you're paying per month is probably going to go up if you switch to one of these new plans. So it's gone up from $15 a month for 200 megabytes was the old plan. The new one is $20 a month for 300 megabytes. The old plan was $25 a month for 2 gigabytes. The new plan is $30 a month for 3 gigabytes. The old plan was $45 a month for 4 gigabytes and tethering. The new plan is $50 a month for 5 gigabytes and tethering. So the new entry level is 20 a month instead of 15 a month, basically.
I think I'll be able to save money on that.
Yeah. No, I think it's like this is the kind of thing that, depending on your usage, could actually save you money. Yeah.
I have two iPhone data plans that were at unlimited for like $30, right? They were grandfathered. And then I dropped to the 2 gig plan, and I would have dropped to the 200 meg plan, except that One of the lines, mine, routinely goes to like 300 to 350.
Mm-hmm.
And when we have like ubiquitous Wi-Fi when we're on our own turf.
Yeah.
So the only time we really ever use data is when there's either a Wi-Fi issue, connectivity issue, or we're on the road. So I think it's entirely possible that these actually would be able to, I mean, it's only like, you know, $5, but it's possible that they'd be able to save me $10 a month.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
still not as cheap as Ting. Ting would still save me $850 a year if I switched to Ting, but then I'd have to use Android.
Right. Yeah. I think a 300 megabyte a month plan is, would probably meet my needs as well. I mean, you know, again, I'm in a ubiquitous Wi-Fi situation too, so that's not saying all that much, but,
do you ever look at your usage, like on your monthly bill?
Yeah, it's. I mean, it, you know, it's usually between 200 megabytes and 2 gigabytes, but it's usually way closer to 200 megabytes than it is to 2 gigabytes. So
yeah. Well, see, and plus in my area though, like, it's definitely seasonal because I live in a college town, so during the school year, the service just really, really sucks. And I don't know if it's a, I mean, it's a spectrum issue, I think, more than anything, but.
Yeah.
I mean, there are times where, like, I seriously want to put my head through the bus window and I can't, like, get a reliable data connection. And I'm pretty sure it's just because there's so many people with iPhones and Blackberries walking around. But the service definitely seems to pick up in the summer. So I'm pretty sure it's like a spectrum thing. But I really wish that AT&T would just buy some more spectrum in my market already. Like, I don't know why they can't just, you know, pull the trigger on that. It's not like they're going to get free spectrum from T-Mobile. And even if they did... even if that acquisition, because someone was telling me the other day, like, well, it's too bad because the government wouldn't let them buy T-Mobile and that would have fixed the problems. And I had to, like, explain, like, why that wouldn't actually fix any problems and how, especially in our market, it wouldn't fix any problems because there is no T-Mobile in our market.
Oh, wow. They, like, okay. Yeah.
T-Mobile service in my city is roaming off of a small regional GSM operator
that
they buy.
Oh, that's terrible.
That they roam off. Yeah, they don't have, like, a local point of presence in this part of the country. So... I was just like, that does nothing for you, and you were a fool for thinking that that had anything to do with you.
Yeah.
But yeah, this isn't so bad.
No,
I wish they would let you do tethering on the lower plan.
Wait, what's that?
I wish they'd let me do tethering on like the 300 meg plan.
I think you can buy it as an add-on, but I think it's expensive.
Yeah, that's stupid though, because if they were smart, they would let anyone turn on tethering. Because then you would go over.
Yeah, I mean, data is data, right? You've only got so many megabytes anyway. So if you're using it via tethering versus using it on the phone, there's not necessarily that much difference.
I'm probably never going to buy like a G3 iPad, right? Like, unless there's some really amazing deal with the iPad 3 whenever that comes out. Like, I have the Wi-Fi iPad, and I would get a Wi-Fi Kindle if I was getting that. Uh-huh. And it's mainly because I have Wi-Fi everywhere. I'd probably want to use it, but when I don't, I would like to just turn on tethering. Like, that makes more sense than me having to buy a $50 data plan.
Especially with a mobile hotspot thing. I mean, the iPhone can become a mobile hotspot, which is great.
Yep.
You know, I remember when I used one of those from Clear, and you know that I had some issues with the Clear service, but the device itself is great. I mean, you turn on this device, you got your own Wi-Fi network, and everything works, you know, all of your devices can work with that. So that's way more convenient than like buying a separate plan for your PlayStation Vita and buying a separate plan for your iPad and, you know, all that stuff.
If you are not adverse to like doing a jailbreak on your phone, there's like, you know, third party applications that let you turn on tethering without paying $50 a month or whatever. But then there are some people that do that, and then they get like these nasty grams from AT&T, but I think they base that on like usage, not necessarily anything else. I don't know how they would do it any other way.
Yeah, yeah. There's probably some clever ways to figure out if someone's doing that, but I mean, you know, if they're accessing content that an iPhone can't access, if they're downloading a lot of Flash files.
But that acknowledges then at that point that they are actually content monitoring.
Right.
And that's a bigger deal for them. And then you can use that
Exactly. I think this works. I mean, I am planning to at my next opportunity, which is as soon as my current contract is up, I'm thinking of switching to Sprint actually.
I am too.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I want to wait and see if Ting is going to get the iPhone because if they do, then I would be in favor of giving that a try. I mean, there's really no, no reason not to. I mean, it would save me tons of dough. But the only reason that I mean, and it's not like I'm shilling for them. It's not like I don't.
You're not a representative of Ting.
No, I'm not a representative. But the like their usage calculator is pretty cool, and I think that I would not be adverse to saving the $800 a year that they think they can save.
Yep.
But again, it's like it costs me more than that to leave iOS, and there's too many things that I can't give up. I mean, what am I going to do? Am I going to carry around an Android handset that's the size of a paper plate and an iPod?
Yeah. No, and I've said on a previous show, I mean, I have bought, you know, at least $100, more than that, of apps, you know, for my phone.
So I have one app. I've got like one app on my phone that was like $50.
Yeah. I mean, so that adds much value to your current phone. I mean, you know, if you go to a new iPhone, you're transferring that value to that new iPhone. You know, if you're going to rebuy those apps on Android or, you know,
maybe they're different apps. Like, the Omni Group stuff, like OmniFocus. There's no OmniFocus for Android.
Yep.
And there's no there's other applications that I use too. I mean, I can probably find a good text editor that opens files on Dropbox. I'm sure that exists. But so I'm not worried about that, but I am worried about things that are, you know, kind of essential to what I do, and that's things like OmniFocus.
Yep.
And I keep saying OmniFocus because it's like the one thing that I'm like scared to death of losing. Like, I seriously would want, you know, I don't know what I would, I would really have to like rethink my entire world.
It's like losing an internal organ. It's
it would be like losing a hand. Okay. It really would.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. All right. Well, I think that probably does it for this episode of the Hell Yeah Show. That's been episode 22. We're pretty close to have been doing this for 6 months, which is pretty crazy. I know.
I'm really having fun with you, Alan. Thank you.
Yeah, no, it's I hope people out there are actually listening. We get the occasional listener email, but I'm still convinced we have less than a dozen listeners, which is fun, you know.
Well, we did get Ron Howard to say a few nice words for us. It's true.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Please
all right.
Tell your friends about this show.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, and with that'll do it. If you want to email us, the email address is show@hellyeah.com. The web address is show.hellyeah.com. And?
Or on the Twitter machine, twitter.com/hellyeahshow. Send us a tweet @hellyeahshow.
All right. And with that, we will be back next week.
There are dozens of us. Dozens!